Well, good morning again. It's great to see you guys. Man, today we're wrapping up the series we've been in. We've called Tension, where the Bible seems to contradict itself. And so now, this morning, I want to begin with a little game of Would You Rather? Okay? So this sounds fun and exciting, right? So everybody has to play along. Okay? So I want to see some hands. And so the first one's going to be easy. Would you rather always be 10 minutes early... always be 10 minutes late or 20 minutes early. Always 10 minutes late or 20 minutes early. Let's see, the late people. Okay, only a few early people. How many of you grew up in that home where if you weren't 20 minutes early, you were late? That would be my home right there. That was right. That's why I am the way I am. Would you rather know the history of every object you touched or be able to speak to animals? Oh, which one, Luke? And how many of you say speak to animals? Anybody say you want to know history when you touch them? Oh, we got a couple of people, nerds. No, just kidding. Here's a fun one. Would you rather have all the traffic lights you approach be green or never have to stand in line again? Ooh. Wait. You're sitting in line, but it's only this way. It said standing in line. So see it. So there's the difference, the qualifier. Green light people? Okay. Waiting in line people? Oh, wow. You people hate queuing up there. That's awesome. All right, here's another one. Oh, this is a good one right here. Would you rather have unlimited international first class plane tickets or never have to pay for food at a restaurant again? Which one is it then?
Restaurant.
Oh, how many restaurant people there? How many? I was like, give me the flight to around the world, man. I'll sleep on the street in another country if I have to. I don't need money. I just get me there. That's all I need. Man, oh, I can eat anywhere. All right. Would you rather? Oh, this would be fun. Would you rather be forced to dance every time you heard music or forced to sing along to any song you heard? Oh, which one? Now, this one may be better if you vote for your, you know, significant other there. Do you want to hear them singing? That's the or dancing. Because Carrie would say, please don't have Brent dance ever. The boy can't dance. It's just not genetic. So let him sing. So how many of you would say, I'd rather sing? How many of you would say you'd rather dance? Now, all right. So we get music up here every Sunday. I don't see any of that taking place out here. Now, come on. Amy needs to get on that. Let's get that happening here. Okay, a couple more here. Would you rather give up using a phone or tablet forever or give up having salt on your food? Oh, that's a tough one, right? Salt? Anybody willing to give up salt? No? How many of you say I'd give up my phone? Take my phone, please. I got to have my salt. Interesting. All right. This last one's a tough one, too. Would you rather lose the ability to read or lose the ability to speak? How many of you would say I would rather lose the ability to read? Okay, how many of you would say I'd rather lose the ability to speak? Okay, about half and half. Interesting. As I thought about this last one as I laid in bed last night, I thought, you know, I think I could give up my ability to speak. Even though that's kind of my job, I'd have to learn sign language or something to be able to communicate. But then I found a loophole. It said you couldn't read, but it didn't say you couldn't listen to audiobooks or podcasts, so I'm fine. I mean, I'm 47. I had to pull out cheaters this year anyway, and if you've noticed, my Bible's getting further and further away when I read on the stage, so the reading thing's about to happen anyway, so... Isn't that funny? We present these goofy options. It's like give up your phone or lose salt. Is that really a choice you ever have to make? No. No, that's not a choice. And yet we play these silly games and we go, okay, I'll play your silly game, Brent, but we know that's not really true. But a lot of times as we've been in this series, I think we've seen that sometimes how we approach faith and approach these big topics of faith, we get to the place where we actually create that dynamic that says, well, I have to pick one or the other. I can't pick both. And the reason we do this silly game here is to remind us it's not that way. And I hope that you've seen over this series that it is not that way at all. That it's that our faith is bigger than to say you have to do one line of thinking forever. That we can exist and live uncomfortably so in tension between things that will be pulling at us our whole lives. And today, what I want us to do is look at this, and as we wrap this up, talk about what do we do here, reminding us all along the way that we're moving beyond the either-or mentality to figure out, is there a both and? Amy reminded me this week, the great theologian Daniel Tiger, he says this, he says, it's okay to have two emotions. Anybody heard that from Daniel Tiger? Amy obviously has many times, mother of toddlers there. We get in that mentality that's like, no, you can't. No, you can't. You can't have these two things. You can't be happy and angry at the same time. You can't be sad and whatever. And Daniel Tiger telling kids from toddlers on up, yes, you can. And so really, we want the Daniel Tiger approach to our faith here to say, yes, we can. We can have two thoughts in our head. We can have two ideas or beliefs in tension all throughout our faith, even sometimes when they seem like they're contradictory values or beliefs. And so I want to do a quick rundown of where we've been through this series. So stay with me on this journey here. We started week one, way back when, about 7 weeks ago. And we talked about the sovereignty versus free will, sovereignty of God versus the free will of man. And a lot of times, theologians love to debate this. They love to say, well, it has to be one or the other. And what we see is that, no, these two can exist in tension if we see it properly, that yes, from one side, it looks like, yes, God is completely sovereign. From the other side, it looks like man has complete and total free will. But in God's economy, in God's system, we do have free will in his sovereignty. It's an amazing thing. And we need to remember, God is bigger than us, and the idea of God is much larger than many of us can comprehend. And that's the way, if it's the God we can comprehend, is it really God? And this is okay. It forces us to go, well, how can this be? And so we struggle with that. Can we really have a sovereign God with free man? And we would say, yes, we can. And we talked about the contradiction of being in the world and not of it, that we have to be here. This is our location. But just because we are located here doesn't mean we have to take on the influences of the world, to allow all the things that are out in the world to continue to influence us, that there has to be a bigger, greater, stronger influence that is moving us as we live. And then we talked about strength and weakness. And man, isn't that a funny one? Because we found out that it's actually in our weakness that God's strength is made perfect in us. It's not that we have to be strong, it's that we are strong because God says we're strong, and it's in that weakness we're at our strongest. Does that make any sense? Nope, not at all. Is it tension? Absolutely. You completely understand it? I give you about 65%. That's good, right? And that's okay. We can live there. We don't have to have this all figured out. Then we talked about the fun one of freedom and responsibility. Freedom is such a value in our culture, and any threat to freedom seems to be met with violent resistance. But we saw that freedom cannot be our ultimate value, that it is going to come about, but as followers of Jesus, we have to be willing in our freedom, in our complete and total freedom in Jesus, we must be willing to limit that freedom for the sake of others, just as Jesus limited his freedom for us. He's been our guide through this whole thing. Then we went to the tension of the Old and New Testaments, and we're really looking at, is the Bible presenting two different gods? Or is it one singular God? And we discovered it is one singular God, that as we move from the Old to the New Testament, we just get a clearer picture of who God is, that is ultimately consummated in the person of Jesus Christ. And if we wonder, if we question, what is God like? All we have to do is pull out the Gospels and we read about who Jesus is, because he is the perfect representation of God. He is God, and he shows us exactly what God is like. And when we try to understand that, when we look at the Old Testament, we see judgment and we see wrath and we see all these things, we bring them into the light of the New Testament to understand that all these things are coming about because of God's love for us. We talked about the tension of being called apart. That happens sometimes when Pastor Ryan left here to go down to Sheridan. This is his second week pastoring that church. He and I have been talking a ton, which is fun. But we realize that sometimes God leads us on different paths, and that's okay that we can do that, that we all don't have to stay together all the time. But we did say that wherever you are, regardless of where God has placed you, be used by God there. And then if he calls you, be willing to go. Just be open, be surrendered, be willing to do whatever God calls you to do. And then last week, we looked at this one that I told you honestly, I didn't see as a tension until I heard it mentioned on a podcast, and it just wrecked my brain a little bit. And it's the tension of unity and holiness. And this is a big one where the temptation is for us to go to one extreme or the other, because we'll want to move all to unity to the disregard of holiness, or all to holiness and throw away unity. But we understand that when we don't hold these two things in tension, an incredible thing happens to us, that our witness to the world diminishes, just disappears when we don't have unity and holiness. If we're known by our disunity or our unholiness, there's a problem in our witness in the world. And so today, what I want to do just in the next few minutes is talk about, so how do we handle this tension? What do we do with this tension? We've tried to give you guys along this journey some things to think about and how to handle the tension, but today I want to just kind of focus in this avenue for the rest of the time that we have. You see, I think acknowledging the tension is a start. Anybody here grow up in a church that really acknowledged stuff like this? Or was it a little bit more black and white that said, nope, there's only one way to believe, there's only one thing to believe, you believe this or you're out? I mean, typically more of a fundamental black and white faith is what some of us grew up with. And in that, the idea of tension can be a real unsettling thing. But really, acknowledging that tension exists, acknowledging that in the tension, we won't have all the answers, acknowledging that there may be doubts along the way. Oh no, not that word. Acknowledging that we may have questions. That's okay. That's okay. That is a part of the faith journey. And so really, as we've been through this series, what we've wanted to do is just bring this out into the open and start with just the idea of acknowledging the tension. And we've also each week talked about the extremes that we can fall into, and we've wanted to point them out because that will help us maybe from driving our car off into one of those ditches or the other. But what else? What else can we do to live in that tension? And then above and beyond that, what do we do with the topics we haven't covered? Because you could easily find a ton more attention things that exist in the Bible. In fact, on our Facebook group page this week, I posted a list of all these things that exist in tension. And even that's a partial list because there's so many more things that we're called to wrestle with. How do we do this? How do we handle the tension? Well, that's what I want us to look at today. Well, other than the extremes we've talked about, what I'd love to do is begin with, what are some other unhealthy ways that we may try to cope with the tension? What do we maybe do that helps us get beyond it? Because it is an uncomfortable place to be. There's a book out there that I used a lot for this series by an author named Klein Snodgrass. And it's called Between Two Truths, Living with Biblical Tensions. And he talks about how tension is good, and it doesn't have to be seen as something that destroys us or causes us pain. And he says, he writes this, he says, tension in the Christian life is not like a tightrope where we must fear falling off either side. How many of you would admit that you think that's probably where I've been, that in this tension, I feel like, oh gosh, I have to be perfect. If I move to one side or the other, I'm going to just wreck everything. He says, no, it's not like that. It's not where you must fear falling off either side. He says, there would be no peace in that. A more appropriate image is that of a stringed instrument. Properly attached at the right places, the instrument can be played. If the string is too loose, music cannot be produced. If it's too tight, the string will break. So that's the image that we want to have as we think about the tension. How do we get both sides? I thought that was a beautiful picture, which is why I wanted to share it with you. Because that's what we're talking about. Living in that tension, getting those posts tightened up just right to know exactly how we should live there. Not fearful, not afraid that we're going to wreck our faith and run away or whatever if we don't get this right, but understanding that grace is over all this. that God's grace is upon us as we live in the tension. And hopefully that grace that God has given us exudes out of us to one another as we give that grace to others as they're learning to live in that tension as well. So what are the other unhealthy coping mechanisms that we might employ in order to deal with this? And I think the first one is just simply this, simplistic thinking. Simplistic thinking. One of my greatest frustrations in life right now is when we see complicated things happening around the world and in our country. And the solution that often is presented is the most simple. But complex problems rarely are solved with simple solutions. And sometimes we take a simplistic approach to our faith. And when we do that, I think we miss out on the greater thing that God has for us, understanding greater depths of our faith. Now, I'm not saying faith has to be complicated, because Jesus himself even said it only takes childlike faith to come to him, to know him. But we don't stay there. We don't end up there. Yes, it's a childlike faith, but he didn't mean that this whole thing would become automatically simple as a result. I mean, even when we stop just for a moment, we think about God himself. What do you think of when you think of God? Give me some answers. What do you think of when you think of God?
Heaven,
okay. Huge, what'd you say?
Grace.
Love. So I heard something.
Just.
Okay.
Close.
All right, so Amy, you didn't know you were going to walk into my answer, but you actually did. Because your two things that you said what? You said big, huge, and close. Those nice little theological words were imminence and transcendence. I love those words. God is near, and yet God is far. How does that compute? Can you take either one of those things away? No. Yet somehow, in our limited human understanding, we are supposed to wrap our minds around this idea of God being both imminent, near us, and transcendent beyond our understanding. Our salvation. How are we saved? Paul's pretty clear, right? By faith, not of works. And yet a few books over in the New Testament, what does James say? Oh, but let me tell you about this faith. Faith without works is dead. Okay. So faith and works, faith no works. Anybody else a little confused? That's the whole point about faith, is that I think the problem with American Christianity mostly has been that we have so simplified faith that we've reduced it down to, well, say these magic words and faith is magically upon you, and we've taken all the mystery of tension away. We've taken all that away, and in doing so, we've missed God in the process. We've created a simplistic religion that doesn't really help us at all. Gives us the right behavior to do without the transformation taking place in our hearts. So we need to move beyond the simplistic answers because they don't exist. Okay? So secondly, what can we do, I think, is another problem is this. We will shut down. If we're not careful, you ever get to the end of a problem and you're just like, okay, I'm done. I love to do word puzzles and puzzles. I have some on my iPad, and I just love to do them. I do them every day. Ryan always thought that was amazing about me. When we traveled, I'd do Sudoku. I like Sudoku. I am. I love it. But you know, have you ever gotten to the place in a puzzle where you're just so frustrated, and you're just like, oh, forget it. And you just move on, and you go, anybody else like me in that? See those hands? Thank you. Thank you. I see those hands. Of course. That happens in faith as well. We get to a place where we may not fully understand something, and the temptation is for us to just pull back and go, okay, I'm just not going to deal with it. I'm going to shut down completely. It's too hard. I just want following Jesus to be easy. But again, just like in the idea of simplicity, where did we get the idea that following Jesus was easy? Well, I'll tell you, most of us in the places we grew up or first heard about faith, it's not. Look at the lives of the people in the Bible. Their lives were never easy. Their lives were never full of comfort and ease. They were always difficulty. Look at Peter. Look at Paul. How easy were their lives? How much junk did they have to endure for the sake of knowing and following Jesus? A bunch. So we have to fight against this idea of just, well, if I can't understand it, I'm just going to shut down. Because when we shut down, we move to the next thing, which is we just become passive. We don't think, we don't move, we just go wherever the wind blows us. So if we're with this group, we become that. If we're over there, we go that way. And that's where the danger comes in, because when we're passive, it means we're more open and susceptible to going to one of those extremes or the others. As one commentary I read this week said, it says, the dangers of tension are real, but the dangers in dealing with only half-truth are much greater. We can't get to this place where we're unwilling to deal with it. Or probably the greatest danger I see is this, deconstruction. That is a very in vogue thing to do right now. You hear a ton right now about certain Christians walking away from faith, deconstructing their faith, just getting out of it. We can't resolve the tension, or we don't want to, or we think the tensions can't be resolved, so we just completely give up. Now, I don't want to be simplistic in my understanding of everybody who has deconstructed faith, but I would say that many times in the articles I read, handling the tension is part of it. Problem of evil seems to be number one. How could a good God let bad things happen? And because we can't get an answer to that question, we go, I'm out, I'm done, I'm walking away. And you see, the problem is, yes, sometimes bad things happen to good people. And we are left trying to figure out why. And sometimes we don't get the answer. We're just like Job. At the end of the story of Job, he never gets an answer. He never gets, well, I did this to you because, or I allowed this to happen to you because. We just need to be aware that this is where we, I think, will move towards. We want simplicity, we'll shut down, we'll be passive, or we'll even possibly deconstruct. But let me ask you this question. As you look at this list, are there any of these ways for coping with the tension that you see in your life? Or anything that you might gravitate towards that you think, okay, I need to pay attention to this. We need to be willing to cope with this stuff. And we don't have to do it alone. We need to be willing to cope with it in community, to surround ourselves with others and to have trust in people enough that when we're struggling with these things that we're holding in tension, that we're willing to say, hey, I need to share with you. I'm struggling here. I'm trying to understand this. And then if you're the person hearing that, you need to be trustworthy enough to not go, well, you're not a very good Christian then, are you? To listen and help them process and understand in love and in grace. So what do we do? How do we handle the tension? Well, we're going to jump over to Philippians again. We looked at this book last week. The letter that Paul wrote, here's a church that's struggling. They've got some things happening inside the church that Paul's trying to address, some things outside the church, some attacks, some persecution coming in. And so Paul writes them this letter to help them figure out how to deal with their tensions. And in the very beginning of Philippians chapter 1, he's introduced himself. He's done the whole greeting thing. And as part of the greeting, Paul writes this. He says, and this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. Here's this opening letter, this greeting, and he lays out for them exactly what he wants. Turk, go to that previous slide with the verse on it, the first part of it. And he says, and this is my prayer that your what? What was that word again?
Love.
Oh, thank you. There we are. That your love. Now, I realize in American culture, we think love, we think rom-coms, we think, oh, sweet, gushy feeling that makes me feel all happy inside. No, it's bigger than that. It's deeper than that. When Paul is talking about love here, he's talking about this idea that something that moves us and motivates us. And it's not just the gushy feeling, but it's actually something that turns into action. It's the thing that surrounds us and motivates everything we do. And he doesn't just say love. He says, I want your love to grow. I want it to abound. We don't use that word much. We want it to exist in large numbers and grow. And grow. And love is a critical component in dealing with tension. It's so critical because it's what guides us, it's what motivates us, it moves us to action when we disagree with somebody or we see somebody struggling, or when we're willing or tempted to move to the extremes, or when we're tempted to view others as something less than made in the image of God. Love is what overwhelms all that and keeps us in the tension where we need to be. It allows us to disagree without being disagreeable or a jerk. It allows us and others to wrestle with the big issues of life with grace, without thinking less of them or feeling the need to attack them. You ever wondered why sometimes when somebody presents a different idea, that sometimes, maybe it's just me, but sometimes my initial reaction is to, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you present something and I'm like, I'm all in, let's go. We're gonna get them up, let's have it out. Why? I know, me, shocking, isn't it, Amy? Meek, mild Brent, who would have guessed? I'm not gonna ask for a show of hands for whoever else is like me. Why do we get that way? What does it say about our faith that if it's so fragile that somebody posing a question or presenting an opposite viewpoint has the ability to make us so angry that we have to bow up and get ready to fight them over it? It says more about us and our faith than it does about the topic, right? It says we're missing the love. Our faith needs to be secure enough. We need to understand our faith isn't built on beliefs. You get that, right? Our faith is not built on believing the right things. Our faith is built on Jesus Christ. He's the one. And there's nothing that anybody can say, nobody's view of hell, nobody's view of whatever, that's ever going to knock me off because my faith isn't believing six doctrinal statements that exist on the Ashword Church website. It exists in Jesus Christ, period. And the way I see and I know this is because when I read how Jesus interacted with others, guess what he did? He challenged and pushed back when he needed to. Yeah, he turned over a table or two, and that was okay. But the most of the time when he dealt with people, especially those that he disagreed with and were in sin, it wasn't an angry exchange. It wasn't going to knock him off his game, and it wasn't such a challenge to his faith that he's like, I've got to beat you back. You know what he did? He just lived in that tension the whole time. You know what it did to those that disagreed with him? Woo, it made them quite angry. They did not like it at all. It starts with love. We have to focus on love. And you know why? Because God doesn't have love. God doesn't give love. God is love. Get the difference? You love all these grammar lessons I've been leaning into lately? There's a difference to just say God has love than saying God is love. It is the core of his essence. It is everything that makes him up as God. It is who he is. He oozes love. When God sweats, it's love. I mean, that's how this is. He cannot help but be love. Everything about him is love. And we should want to look like Dad. If Dad looks that way, Dad's motivated that way, if Dad is love, then at his children, we should be love. And if love doesn't direct our actions, we are wrong, just so you know. If love doesn't direct everything that we do, you are wrong. So what does God's love look like? You know, the best definition I came up was 1 Corinthians 13. It's love is patient, it's kind, it's not self-seeking, it's self-controlled, it's not proud, it's humble, it's not easily angered, rejoices in the truth, protects, trusts, hopes, and perseveres. Love never fails. Our love should be this increasing thing that is growing more and more in our lives. And notice what he said. It's growing in knowledge and depth of insight. When Paul says knowledge, you know what he's saying there? He's not saying, oh, go to more Bible classes. To know someone biblically, you know what I'm talking about, right? When Adam knew Eve biblically, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Relationally, closely, intimately, that's the same thing. God says he wants us to grow in our love by knowing him, relationally experiencing him, and also not just that, but depth of insight. Man, isn't that something that we need? The clarity to know what really matters is what Paul is talking about. You know, sometimes I think we have a great discerning spirit when we can go, oh, I can know good from evil. Great. It's not what Paul is talking about. He's saying we have to be able to know what is good from what is best. And to be able to have that moral insight, you know what that means for us? It means that discerning spirit to be able to tell the difference, to be able to see how things are different. And then Paul wraps this up when he talks about you need to be pure and blameless with the fruit of righteousness. all the things we're talking about, the tensions that we exist in, the ultimate thing is, what are you doing with that? What is that shaping you into? Is it shaping you into the person that looks more like Jesus to have that kind of fruit in your life? Or is it turning you into an angry, bitter, you know, deconstructed, non-faithful, whatever? What Paul's praying for the people here is that our love grows in knowledge and depth of insight so that we become pure and blameless. That holiness we've talked about, that fruit of righteousness, something that's produced in how we live. And the question is, do we see that in how we live? Do you see that fruit in your life? So I want you to stop and think for just a moment here. So thinking about living in the tension, all the things we've talked about, sovereignty, free will, strength, weakness, unity, holiness, all that list we went through at the beginning. What's something in your life right now that is causing you to live in that tension? And how are you responding to it? Just recently, you know, I sat down with a friend of mine, and I know this friend has a different view on some theological things than I do. And you know what I did? I sat down and I said, tell me how you feel about this. Tell me how you get there. Okay. And at the end, I said, you know, I can't quite get there with you, but I can appreciate how you got there. And guess what? We didn't walk away both believing the same thing, but we did walk away still being friends. Political differences. When somebody posts something on Facebook, do we feel the need to rise up and critique, or do we feel the need to allow that love to overflow in how we respond to one another? Can we disagree politically and still be friends? I hope so. We need a little bit of more than that in our lives. Can we be friends with the people in the church down the street? Can we be friends with those around us that don't believe like we do? I would love to say yes. I hope we can say yes, because this is what Jesus modeled for us. We can talk, we can discuss, we can even disagree. But these tensions can compel us to love one another, to pray for one another, to encourage one another, and yes, even in moments, to challenge one another. You know, sometimes the tension is hard. I read a story this week about a man whose wife left him and his sons, and he had to struggle with the tension of, why did this happen? He said he didn't doubt God's love, but he questioned how God could allow this to happen, and he ached why his prayers were not answered. That's tension. Do you understand how we live there? That we don't allow it to knock us off, and we understand that God is still love even if we don't understand everything that's happening. Jesus is that model. How closely does our life reflect him? That's the question. Are we willing to live in the tension, embracing that tension with grace and humility, just as Jesus did for us?